across her shoulder, made her look a little like a military man. Lovely Rita, meet her maid, may I inquire discreetly, when are you free to take some tea with me?
Greetings, Xenophiles. On this day in 1968, the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band became the first rock album ever to win Album of the Year at the Grammys. That's why you just heard that. Today, because today only happens once every 4 years, the chances of something interesting happening on this day in history are diminished. So let's see what we can find. On this day in 1504, Christopher Columbus used a lunar eclipse to frighten hostile Jamaican Indians. Inventive. On this day in 1712, in Sweden, they decided to follow February the 29th with February the 30th, which was required to bring the country into alignment with the Georgian calendar. It was a few interventions. The final one was in 1753, when they basically lopped off half of February. But February the 30th, 1712, remains the only example of such a date in history. On this day in 1908, Dutch scientists produced solid helium. I still don't know if we've ever found a use for it, but they did. And happy birthday to Herman Hollerith. Who he? American inventor of the electric tabulating machine. It used the punch cards that became the primary input method for the first computers. He went on to found a company that became IBM. And he died at age 69 years, but having only celebrated 17 actual birthdays, because he was born on a leap year. And rest in peace, Dave Myers, from Hairy Bikers. There we go. This week, episode 200. Count them, 200. Imagine that. So that needs a special guest, and we are genuinely in the presence of excellence. We have an actual His Excellency sitting just over there, recently appointed as, not even that recently, last year, appointed as His Majesty's Ambassador to Romania, Giles Portman. Hello, how are you?
Hello, Steve. Welcome. I'm great.
Welcome
Thank
along.
You for inviting me.
Welcome along. I'm going to start with the usual first question, right? Simply this. Giles Portman, who do you think you are?
Well, that's a very existential question for late in the day, Steve. Well, I think I'm the British ambassador to Romania. I hope so. But I think I'm also a father and a husband, tennis player, keen gardener, and I'm an Aston Villa fan.
Oh, right, okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you're the first guest we've had this year that wasn't a Liverpool fan.
Well, I thought you can say I'm the first guest you've ever had who's an Aston Villa fan, which is probably also true, right?
No, I think I've had one before, or maybe even two.
Amazing.
Yeah, Aston Villa, get around. I mean, you know, it's worth supporting. Good enough team. So, yes, what you are now is you are the current British ambassador to Romania. And we will talk about what you do and what the embassy does and how you make this role your very own when we get to that point in the story. But we're going to start, as we always start, at the very beginning with this bit.
Expat Life.
The Rollback.
Tell me about your childhood.
Tell me about your childhood.
Well, my childhood was great. I was born and raised in a very, very little village called Coombe, which I'm told means valley
yes,
in Welsh.
Something like that.
Yes, but it wasn't in Wales at all. It was in Oxfordshire, and it was about 300 people in the village. I think there were 5 farms, a church, a pub and a school.
Perfect.
And it was lovely. And it was right on the edge of Blenheim Park, which is where Blenheim Palace is, mm-hmm. which is where Winston Churchill was born. So we had this lovely park right on the edge of the village. So it was lovely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a nice rural, typical sort of picture postcard country village life. It makes it sound really old, but it wasn't that long ago, was it? I mean, this is the thing, right? I forget how old I am. And suddenly I think, wow, aren't the ambassadors getting young? Started with policemen, you know? So big family, small family. How was your, were you part of a, did you have to fight for attention, basically?
No, I have one elder brother, and we got on reasonably well, actually, and still do. So, it was all good. And I went to the little village school, which had 60 kids in the entire school.
Uh-huh.
3 classrooms and a playing field.
60 in the whole school?
Yeah. 60 in the whole school. Amazing, right? So three classes with 20 each.
Yeah.
I just remember most of my time being outside. We just played football incessantly. And if we didn't play football, we kind of went fishing or cycling or went and swam in the river and stuff like that. So it felt like a very sort of outdoorsy, healthy, innocent lifestyle.
And you still imagine that every day when it wasn't snowing, it was sunny.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure this is my nostalgia creeping in. But that's how I remember.
Oh, really, that's how it used to be. It's not the case, actually. So, obviously, climbing trees rather than skateboarding down roads was what you were doing.
I was climbing trees. I was never a skateboarder, I have to admit.
Mm-hmm. And so, what were your parents? What was their position in life?
So my parents both worked in Oxford and the village was sort of 10 miles outside Oxford. And my dad was an academic and my mum was a librarian who then became an estate agent. So Oxford was kind of the centre of the universe for me. That's where they went off to work every day.
Every time I think of Oxford, I think of 3 things. First, obviously, the university.
Yeah.
Secondly, Radiohead.
Yep.
And thirdly, there should be nobody left alive in it because I watched Inspector Morse.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And every week, like 5 people would get murdered.
Yeah. It never felt that unsafe when I was there.
I'm sure.
But, and it just kept on going, didn't it? Inspector Morse became Lewis, and then Lewis became something else.
And then the current or the latest incarnation of it is something called Endeavour.
That's right.
Which is the young Morse.
Because
that's why he would never tell you his actual first name, because it was Endeavour.
That's right.
A strange name.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the old great show. There's the one thing that would make me turn off the phone and lock the door for 2 full hours, uninterrupted TV viewing, Morse. It's the only thing that's ever done that to me.
Yeah.
Normally, I'm asleep after half an hour. It doesn't matter what it is. Anyway, this is not about me. How was school for you? I mean, with academic parents, because librarians, academic enough, right? And living on the edge of Oxford, school must have been important.
So primary school was pretty gentle and rural in my little school with 60 people. And then when I was 11, I went to secondary school in Oxford.
Right.
And my brother was there. He was 3 years above me. And that was quite academic, 6 days a week.
6?
Latin, Greek, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it was... It was pretty good. I was pretty happy at school.
It wasn't just something you endured. You actually enjoy it?
No, I think I got happier as I went on. You know, I think everyone sort of struggles a bit in teenage years. And by the time I got to the sixth form and I was doing the subjects I liked and I knew who my friends were, I had great friends. And I remember the last 2 years of school just being really, really nice, actually. Uh-huh. Good fun.
And you already spoken about what you did outside of school, which was climbing trees and playing football and staring at the sun and snowing, throwing snowballs the other half of the year. But things like family holidays. Were you zooming around the place, or were your family holidays also just like home?
Family holidays in the 1970s and 1980s entailed like putting two enormous suitcases on the top of a very clapped out old car.
Yeah,
and driving all the way down to Dover, taking a ferry, because right. It was no Eurostar, and driving around France for a couple of weeks
nice.
On a very low budget. And in those days, of course, no kind of internet, no sat-nav, no planning. So my dad would just sort of vaguely think where we might go in the day and just drive, and then around 4 o'clock sort of think it was time to try and find a hotel. So I remember various times ending up sleeping in the car.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, we basically discovered the whole of France every summer holiday.
But and this is the thing, because you start to forget, you know, man, how did you book a holiday before the internet? You didn't, you just showed up.
It was literally just drive around and hope that there was something there at the end of the day. Yeah.
And so mostly, luckily, there was.
Yeah.
And that's my idea of a holiday, that. Actually, I prefer that to knowing today's Tuesday, we must be here. You know, on Thursday we have to be there.
Yeah, I am sort of a bit the opposite now. I do plan everything, but it's just amazing that you used to sort of drive off with two young children and no idea if you were going to be able to feed or house them at the end of the day.
This necessity, the feeling, the necessity to plan everything, is that, that comes with the job, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were a teenager, you know, just as you were starting to get into, as you mentioned already, starting to enjoy the school and knowing what's what and who's who. Everybody wanted to be something, right? You want to be a train driver, an astronaut, a doctor, a lawyer, or what?
Yeah, I wanted to be an architect for years and years.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't draw, though.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I could. I was very into art and design at school, and that was one of my A-levels.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had ended up as a kind of architect and planner.
Right.
I was fascinated in kind of buildings and layouts and how you kind of design a lovely home and things like mm-hmm. that. So I was convinced for years I wanted to be an architect.
Right.
And then I think I found it took 7 years to qualify, and I just decided that was a bit too long.
Doesn't take that long to be a boxer.
I kind of went off it slightly, but it's always in the back of my head as my kind of other life if I had chosen that.
It's too late, right?
It's kind of my hobby.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still really interested in traveling around, looking at houses. First thing I do if I go into someone's house is start sort of nosing around and working out what the design
the tape
is,
measure
what the layout
out.
Is. And I still love doing
it. Then you go home and put it all in AutoCAD. Brilliant. You know what? Clock's ticking as it always is. Time to play first piece of music. Now, I already told you this when you presented me your song choices. Mm. You stole my iPod. Why did you pick The Cure as the first? And this particular track, Just Like Heaven, what and why?
Yeah, so, I mean, I loved The Cure in my later days at school. I think The Cure and The Smiths were my two favourite bands when I was in sixth form. But I was very into The Cure. And there are loads of kind of their more sombre, earlier music that I could have thought of. But I've gone for something a bit more upbeat. I think Just Like Heaven came out just at the time I was leaving school. And I think it's just a really well-written, positive, poppy sort of melodic song.
Yeah, and it perfectly is. Let's hear it, The Cure and Just Like Heaven.
people gather around Radio Gorilla.
Expat Life.
Money, money, money.
It's the 200th show. Can you believe it?
Welcome back. It is indeed the 200th show with Giles Portman, His Excellency, His Majesty's Ambassador, nonetheless. Now, Giles Portman, this is money, 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 basically. Okay, school. You've finished your school. You know what you want to do in your life. but you start with university. Now, I would have been a rebel, right? And I'd have wanted to study in Cambridge. Just like that, just to annoy people. Where did you study?
I did want to study in Cambridge.
Really?
But actually, the course I wanted to do was only done in Oxford. It was brand new, and it was classics and English. So it was comparing how ancient literature had an influence on English literature. And so I did it in Oxford.
Yeah.
And it was just a lovely way to spend 3 years, just reading amazing books for 3 years.
Close enough that your mum could do your laundry.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's smart thinking. So, did you take this course with a particular aim in mind? You said you wanted to be an architect. Well, classics and literature, that doesn't fit.
Yeah, I'm afraid I was completely aimless at university, as was my father before me and my brother. None of us had any sort of real plans what we wanted to do. So all my friends were doing kind of economics and useful things that got them jobs in the city straight after, or law degrees. No, I had no idea what I wanted to do.
And refreshingly honest.
Yeah. So that's kind of why at the end of university, I just bought a one-way ticket to Spain and went to live in Spain for a year.
Oh, just like that. Boom.
Yeah, just like that. And I got a job in a language school.
Okay.
And so I learned to speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. I learned to teach English, learned to sort of survive in a foreign country for a bit. And it was great. I think that's when I kind of finally grew up.
Where in Spain?
In Madrid.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Where else? I mean, it's the place to be.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful city.
I was absolutely skint. Yeah. I lived in a 3-bed flat with 5 people, but we always managed to save up just enough money to go travelling around the country at the weekends.
Right.
I saw the whole of the country, and I think that's probably where I began to sort of get that idea that maybe rather than be an architect, I might become a diplomat.
Okay, so this was a gradual process.
Gradual realisation, like yes.
And okay, how did you realise it?
So I came back after a year. And I still didn't have a job. And I worked in publishing for a year, actually, in London, which was really good fun and made some great friends. But I guess I kind of thought I need to do something a little bit more kind of challenging, really. Mm-hmm. It was very gentle.
Right.
And so I thought I was quite interested in government work, but also having lived abroad for a year, I thought I like that international lifestyle. So I kind of put the two together.
Okay.
And decided to try and join the Foreign Office. And,
right.
And did.
And just like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, how do you do that? You just rock up, you just post a CV off or knock on a door and say, can I come in, please?
No, sadly, it was a bit more rigorous than that.
Gives a job.
You have to do a kind of IQ test.
Okay.
Which lasts a whole day. And then if you get through that, you spend a couple of days doing a kind of group exercises and interviews and being observed by a psychologist and that sort of thing. And if you get through that, you get through to a final interview panel.
Right.
And then the last things you do are security vetting.
Okay, that's important, I guess.
And language aptitude, where they test you in a made-up language and see what your capabilities
are. In a made-up language, Teletubbies.
And see what you like at learning foreign languages, to which the answer to me was quite bad.
Well, because, I'm sorry, mate, you have an excuse, right? You're English.
Yeah.
That's my excuse.
Exactly.
Sticking to it. But anyway, despite that, you got the job.
I got the job.
What was your first post?
About to go to Cape Town.
Ooh.
And then they told me, actually, we found someone whose language skills are even lower than yours.
So we'll send them instead.
He's going to Cape Town and we're swapping you. So we're sending you to Prague. So my first full posting was in Prague, which is where I met my wife. And Prague is sort of, it's kind of home for me as well as London. And now Bucharest, so it all worked out right.
Prague is it's one of two places on earth that I would consider leaving Bucharest for. Mm-hmm. The other one being Lisbon.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. They're both beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And different in their own. Mm. Very, very different. Anyway, so Prague, to do what? You didn't go straight in as ambassador, right?
No, I went in as second secretary for politics and press. Oh. It was a great job. So it was half working with the media and half working with politicians and political reporting. It's around the time that all this part of the world was joining the EU, joining NATO. Mm-hmm. It was great.
And I've brought together some of your experience in the media, in the publishing, in the languages, in the forum, the whole lot. It all kind of comes together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was wonderful.
And then obviously you didn't stay there. You drifted. Did you sort of go up the ladder in Prague, or did you move around and about?
No, you kind of have to move to go up the ladder. Right. So I moved back for 1 year in London, working for the Minister for Europe, running his communications outfit.
Okay.
Then I went to be a negotiator in the EU for 3 years, where, among other things, I negotiated Romania's EU accession.
Oh,
well, that was me 20 years ago for the UK.
So no, this is the guy we have to thank.
and then I went to Turkey for 4 years.
Okay.
And then actually I left the Foreign Office for 8 years and I went to work for the EU until Brexit. And then I came back as a Brexit negotiator. So I think I've seen both sides of that fence.
Wow, yeah. Yeah. Which side's better?
I can't say.
You don't have to answer that. I just thought I might catch you out there, but no. Never forget where you are.
They were both great, is the answer.
They were both great. That's the correct answer. Diplomatic answer. And so when you... both sides of the... I'm confused. I'm still intrigued by this thing. The EU negotiator for Romania's accession. Which side of the fence were you? Were you sort of pushing Romania in at this point? Were you, backing Romania, or were you part of the other guys saying, convince us?
No. In those days, I think there was a real feeling in the EU that there was a sort of historical and also almost moral obligation that we need to break down the barriers that communism put in our way and kind of reunite the continent. So, no, there was an enormous sort of imperative to get all these countries supported and into the EU and into NATO as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So it is a very, very dynamic, positive atmosphere to work in.
Right. And this probably one of the things that came out of this initiative were projects like FARE.
Yes, that's right.
Which is why I'm sitting here.
Is that right?
Because of a FARE project.
Is that right? Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's taking me back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lifetime ago. Yeah. So, and then you moved. Eventually, we're going to get to the point where, because you'd helped us get into the EU, and then you decided to come here. Right. Mm. And this wasn't forced on you, right? You wanted to do this.
No, okay. Absolutely wasn't forced on me.
Let's talk about it after you've played some Blur.
Yeah.
Again, you've just gone through my iPod playlist. Girls and Boys, Blur, tell me more. Why this one?
So this reminds me of the 1990s. It was just a really positive time. There was kind of Britpop and Cool Britannia, and it was all Oasis versus Blur, and I kind of preferred Oasis at the time and now realise I was totally wrong. And
I was just about to say, you preferred Oasis, you chose a Blur track.
Yeah. No, I've totally revised my opinion. And there are many I could have chosen that are very sort of emotional songs, like To the End and The Universal, but this is just a fantastically positive 1990s kind of Britpop.
It totally is, yeah. Is it from Modern Life is Robot? I think it, no, it's Park Life. It's from Park Life, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yes. Let's listen. Blur.
Down to grace.
Another sponsored track, Carrefour. They're very good. They sponsor local Romanian bands. And instead of a commercial break, we have this.
Poftim brânza românească, deschidem vinul românesc, o zi întreagă și nu numai oferite de Carrefour ascultătorilor Radio Guerilla. Poftim brânza românească, deschidem vinul românesc, o zi întreagă și nu numai oferite de Carrefour ascultătorilor Radio Guerilla.
Expat Life, powered by those beautiful people at Radio Guerilla.
Expat Life.
Chaotic. Quixotic.
Exotic.
The 200th edition of Expat Life. Who'd have thought it?
Not me. Welcome back. Expat Life with His Excellency, Giles Portman right now. This part of the show is called Chaotic, Quixotic, Exotic, and it's supposed to describe Romania. And this is the point where, okay, you decided your next mission and you chose to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell me why. I mean, I'm not like, you know, like I'm shocked by that because it's a very good choice. But what was going through your mind at the time?
Oh, lots of things. So actually, way back in 1990, I went interrailing all through Central and Eastern Europe in one of those kind of picaresque student adventures when we started off with 10 of us and we ended up with just me and one other person. We lost everyone else on the way, lost our money, everything. And I ran out of time, money and passports and friends.
Oh.
And we got as far as the border with Romania. And I thought, right. I've always wanted to come back. And then I did the accession negotiations, as right. I said. And then basically my career after that was all around this region, mm-hmm. Turkey, Western Balkans, Eastern neighborhood, Black Sea. So it was the obvious choice. And there's the Latin angle. Did mm-hmm. Latin at university.
Of course, yes.
And kind of thought this is a language that's linked to Latin. And of course, there's 1.2 million Romanians living in the UK. So
that's
I think
true.
It's a country that we have a really close and warm relationship with.
We share the patron saint.
We do indeed.
With Scotland.
Anyway. So it just seemed like the perfect match, to
mm-hmm.
be honest.
Mm-hmm. And it is. Anyway, you mentioned earlier, I've just remembered something you said earlier. You said a little bit, not entirely, let's say, accurate. You said you were rubbish at foreign languages. I saw the first video you did after you sort of officially stepped into this post, and you did it all entirely in Romanian.
I did, with great help from my team in the embassy, I should say.
I've got to say, I was impressed. Check it out on YouTube. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I've been here 30 years and I can't do that. Yeah. So yes, maybe the Latin helps.
Yeah, I
think
so.
With the structure of
yeah.
that. Because the thing
yeah.
that kills me about Romanian is, they say Romanian grammar is sublime because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it is a bit like that, isn't it? So I think the vocabulary is quite familiar because it's quite sort of Latin mm-hmm. and French and stuff. And then some of the easiest things in the language, like how do you do the present tense? And there's sort of 13 options. And it's quite hard, some of the grammar
yeah.
at the beginning, mm-hmm. especially.
Yeah, but thank God everybody speaks English. At least the ones listening to this show do, hopefully. Yeah, so anyway, so you thought, I'm going to come. Now, were you sort of imagining or angling for something to happen here? Or were you just informed of a vacancy and said, that's it, I'm having it?
So what happens is these jobs come around every 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you're told at least a year in advance what's kind of on the list, and
okay.
you bid for what you want to bid for. So
I
bid. And
like an auction.
Well, yeah, sadly not an auction, but a very long process to
mm-hmm.
go through and a lot of competition because lots of people want to come to do jobs like this. And
yeah.
they're open up not just to diplomats, but to right across the whole public sector
mm-hmm.
in the UK. So yeah, it was tough and demanding, but I'm just really delighted to have got through. And
well, yeah, I can imagine you were like, listen, I helped them get in the EU. Pick me.
It was one of my arguments.
I'm sure it was. And why not? So you came in. Now, question for this: when you come in as the new ambassador, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much of this is about continuity, and how much of it is about new me? Let's do things my way now.
Yeah, it's a combination. I think, you know, the top level of the relationship is set.
Mm-hmm.
We know what we want to work together on in terms of defence and security mm-hmm. and trade and dealing with organised crime and things like that. But every ambassador will have their own skill set, their own interests,
mm-hmm.
their own sort of things that they want to push a bit more. So you know, that's your opportunity to kind of make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also Romania is somewhere where, you know, we're very close in some ways, as I said, through the diaspora. But
yeah.
at the same time, we're opposite ends of the continent. And
correct.
It feels like the sort of place where you can decide as ambassador what you want to do without too many people in London interfering, which suits me fine.
Two time zones away. It's all right. As long as you know, do it early in the morning, nobody's at work yet.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Make your decisions before 10.
Yeah.
No one's going to know. But do you get the, let's say, the opportunity, or are you given the chance to say, okay, do you have a particular thing you want to focus on? Is there a thing you personally would like to do or achieve during your mission here? And how much freedom do you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's loads of stuff we can do in the defence relationship and defence procurement. I think we can become absolutely strategic, really close defence partners. I think the trade relationship, we need to unlock a few little barriers which can really make a difference to trade, and I want to unlock those barriers.
Right.
I think that the challenge on organised crime and things like trafficking and illegal cash is something that really damages people in both our countries, and we should really do all we can to resolve that. You know, I'll judge myself on whether I've made a difference to things like that and made things better in Romania and made things better in the UK and for Romanians in the UK and Brits here.
Right. Yeah, okay. A noble cause on both sides of the, you know, of the fence, as it were. Apart from, many people think, oh yeah, the embassy, yeah, that's that place where you have to go and queue up to get a visa. There's a bit more to it than that, yeah? Is the pub still open on a Tuesday night? It closed down during the pandemic. Wessex, I don't know if it opened up again, the Wessex.
Well, I don't think it is, really.
No. Oh, come on, that's your mission, man. Yeah, that reopened. It was great fun there.
All right, I'll take that away, Steve.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. let's say this year, your main, or the embassy's main focus, apart from the many multi-layered things that you do, do you have a particular project that's like, this year we're going to do this? Boom.
Oh, yeah, the things I just said. So, like I said, I think, you know, I can count on one hand five things that are stopping us trade more. And I think we've solved one of them and we've got four to go. And I would love to resolve those by the end of the year to make it life a lot easier and more attractive.
I almost made a political joke there, but I'm not going to do it.
Go on.
You got one of your five. That's one more than Rishi. You don't have to comment on that.
All right.
It's okay. So, you're going to be here for how long? Do you know when you land, how long you're going to be here? Or do you get some flexibility in that?
It's usually 4 years.
It's usually four. Right, okay. And so it is four.
It can be five.
It can be five?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a feeling it's going to be.
I wouldn't say no.
Yeah, correct. So you're not, after you've been here, 6 months now since you first set 3 months in the post officially.
It's been about it's been about 6 weeks officially since I presented my credentials to I've only been here like 3 months.
The credentials thing, I remember story.
Took a little bit.
Why?
I just think the president does this about sort of four times a year, and I was just—it's just timing. I arrived just after he had done one, and then I had to wait for. He does them in groups of ambassadors, so I had to wait for the new year.
Should have given me a call. I'd have made him speed up. Not like I've got that kind of influence, not at all. So your family's here.
My wife is here, and my kids, because they're now nearly sort of, well, they're kind of sixth formers and nearly at the end of school, so we left them in a boarding school, which was, you know, not easy, but it's a lot easier than it used to be in terms of seeing each other on WhatsApp every night.
Right, you're correct.
Like
and this is in the UK?
In Wimbledon, in London.
Wimbledon, okay.
Yeah.
This is a nice enough place. I mean,
I offered them the choice to either come here or stay with their friends, and they decided they'd stay with their friends.
If they don't know. Listen, kids, you don't know what you're missing. Yeah, are they going to come over for like Easter?
Yeah, of course.
And bits and pieces like that.
They come over for holidays. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite right, too. Yeah. Easter's the big one here, as you know already.
Yeah.
Yeah, much bigger than Christmas.
Yeah.
It's huge, Easter.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing.
Looking forward to it.
See, me, I was never religious, right? But I love Easter here. Because for me, it feels more like a spiritual thing.
Okay.
Than a strictly religious thing. All that going off with the candles down the street at midnight on Sunday. There is a buzz in the air. There's a feel. It's like you're swimming through this spiritualism. It's a marvelous feeling.
That's great. I'm looking forward.
You'll recognize it when you feel it.
Yeah.
Listen up. Time is flying over. And Tinder sticks.
Yes.
Tell me.
Yeah, I remember living in Prague and a Czech friend dragging me down into some sort of basement venue to see a band that had come over from Nottingham, I think, in England. And it was Tindersticks. And I just thought they write beautiful music. And they're one of my favourite bands.
And this is a bit, slightly a little bit more out there, a bit more indie, a bit less mainstream chart than the others.
Yeah.
Than what you played so far. But it's an amazing piece of music. Shame you haven't got the headphones on, you can't hear it, but never mind. Let's pretend by tune. I'd forgotten how good this was. The other thing is, all the tracks you picked have got nice long intros, so we can talk over it and pretend to be real DJs. Let's listen to Tinder Sticks. If you listen to the podcast version of this show, you'll get that song all the way to the end. But because you're listening live, we have to do this.
Expat Life, made in Bucharest, Romania. Heard all over the world.
Expat Life.
Next chapter.
200 shows and counting. Looking forward to episode 300.
Right, here we are. Next chapter. Last chapter of the show. Giles Portman, his Majesty's Ambassador. Your Excellency. Can I call you that?
You don't have to.
Just looking at me like I've gone nuts. Okay, no, this is a relaxed meeting. Right, we've got about 3 minutes to talk about the future. You said already that you like to plan things, but what about the long term?
Oh, wow, yeah, I really don't know. So far, it's been genuinely really great in Romania, and I want to stay here as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And I haven't got a clue what I want to do. By the time I finish here, my kids will be in or even approaching the end of university, and that in itself is such a scary thought. Yes. I'm not going to think beyond that. It's beyond my comprehension.
All right, yeah, because I think, you know, oh my God, by the time the kids have finished university, surely it's time for me to retire.
Well, that had crossed my mind.
Yeah, no, it didn't happen in my case. But the immediate future, do you have any personal projects for the rest of this year?
Well, at the moment, my days are very filled up meeting loads and loads of people around Bucharest. And what I want to start doing is discover the rest of the country. And
yes.
I've got lots of plans for trips to beautiful places around Romania in the spring and summer. So that's my number one goal, discover the country.
Yeah, starting late April when the weather gets nice.
Yeah.
The spring. I could tell you where to go.
Yes.
Everywhere. That's
exactly.
Where to go. Transylvania, massive. The Danube Delta, avoid August. Too many mosquitoes.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Otherwise, any other time, it's an amazing thing. I discovered Transylvania a good few years ago, and it's become my go-to place.
Yeah.
Autumn in Transylvania. You've never seen so many different shades of orange and brown in the leaves. It's the most staggering thing.
Yeah, I can't wait, really.
Yeah. Do you know that, you know, in 5 years, 4 or 5 years' time, when they drag you kicking and screaming away from this place, it'll be to be another ambassador's job somewhere else? Or are there other ways to move upwards and onwards?
I think the most likely is another ambassador's job, mm-hmm. but you never know because, as I said, they don't come around that often and there aren't so many available. So I'm absolutely not worried about that for at least another 2.5 or 3 years.
That's fair enough. Yeah, good attitude.
Yep.
I like it. Yeah, cross that bridge when you come to it. Okay, listen, we are out of time already. I told you it would go quickly.
Yeah.
It's flown by, and we're going to end with some Tears for Fears.
Yeah.
I haven't heard this track for a while. Head Over Heels, tell me why this one, and why Tears for Fears?
So before I was into The Cure at school, I was into Tears for Fears, but no one else was, and I couldn't get anyone to like them. And then last year, in Kingston, in southwest London, they came to play. And my daughter came along with me. She was the only person under 50 in the whole audience.
Well, yeah.
And I just sort of, this is for her, really, because finally, after 40 years, I got someone to come to a Tears for Fears concert with me.
Wow. Yeah. I think I can identify with that. I was always thinking they were an amazing band, and my friends go, they're a bit dull, aren't they? No, they're not.
They were never very cool.
But still, and this one, this particular track, very it's very dramatic.
A lovely song.
You'll find it in
the
same way.
Time.
You reminded me of a story. the only person under 50, right? Last year, I was in Newcastle with my brother at a concert. I think the only time in my life I've been to a concert with my brother.
Okay.
It was the Skids.
Oh right.
You know, the punk band from Scotland from 1978. Yeah. Well, you've never seen so many guys with bald heads. It was astonishing. Anyway, enough about that. This is Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels. Thank you very much, Giles Portman.
It's been great. Thank you very much.
A marvellous story, beautifully told. And once you've done your tour around the country a bit and made your impressions, come back and tell us about it.
I'd love to do that. Thank
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Marvellous. Thank you very much. This has been the 200th edition of Expat Life. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Listen again to this and previous shows. Find us at expatlife.ro.
Expat Life.
New maps, please!
Good night, everybody!
Pentru limba română, apasă 1.